Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, March 28th. I'm Ray Graff. You might have the topic of today's show jangling around in your pocket, in a piggy bank, stashed away in a cabinet, or in a safety deposit box. Here to talk about coins, currency, and precious metals is Jeff DeMiss of Ferris Coin in Albany. If you have a question, now's the time to call. 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also email the program at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, our number here is 800-348-2551. Jeff DeMiss of Ferris Coin will answer your coin questions, currency, bullion, you name it. It's coming up after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Today's show is all about coins, currency, and precious metals, and here to answer your questions about them is Jeff DeMiss, co-owner of Ferris Coin in Albany. In 1930, husband and wife Charlie and Arlene Ferris opened Ferris Stamp in downtown Albany. Later, they incorporated coins into the business as Ferris Stamp and Coin. Today, it's the only authorized United States Mint bullion coin seller in the capital region. Our number here, if you have a question about coins or currency or bullion, is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Again, the number is 800-348-2551. Jeff DeMiss, welcome to the show.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
I would say hi, neighbor, but you moved. You used to be right on Central Ave by the station here.
Yes. In the last Labor Day weekend, we moved up to 199 Wolf Road.
Well, we'll miss you, but I hope you're enjoying the new digs. How did you get into coin collecting as a young person?
Well, like a lot of folks, I inherited my grandmother's coin collection, and that sparked some interest. And it was your typical Morgan dollars, Indian head pennies, buffalo nickels, and always had an interest in history. And from then went to school for finance and kind of came back circle later on where I had a chance to work at Ferris Coin in this business. And
is it an obsession?
I try and separate the two, but it can be, you know, particularly in it is the depth of the coinage and currency and the history that's involved and what it resembles. And money's been around over 2,600 years, and it's fascinating. And just what we have here in the U.S. between tokens, metals, paper money, coins, the variety and the different mint marks just adds to it.
Have you've heard the show in the past?
Yes, we have.
So sometimes people will call in and say, hey, my grandmother had this coin, that coin, and you maybe give a little, an educated guess.
Yes.
This one came in via email before the show started from Rich in New Baltimore. This is so true. As a kid, we used to check the pennies, nickels, and dimes for the rarity of the day. Are there any hidden treasures like circulating misstrikes or dates out there today that we should be checking our change for?
Yes, that material is still out there. There's less of it because of new technology at the Mint, but certainly we still have people who find minor errors, some major errors on coinage, where they're misstruck, double planchets, or you can have where the clipped planchets. So some of them have some minor value from 50 cents and up to some major errors, particularly when you have multiple strikings where you see where it got jammed in the press and it was struck multiple times. Mm-hmm. And usually the stuff that's more fascinating with more errors adds more value to it.
When I was a kid, you know, in the 70s, buffalo head nickels and Indian head pennies, they were common. You'd find mm-hmm. them all the time, mercury dimes, you'd find all that stuff. Nowadays, not so much.
No, things have changed. All your older type coins and silver has been taken out of circulation unless someone has taken it to the bank without knowing of it, or sometimes people are handling the estates. It just gets rolled up and they take the change, and that's where some of it comes from. And
all right, well, here's my lucky dollar. Here, you take a look at that.
Okay. So what you have is a 1921 Denver Morgan silver dollar.
So Denver means it was
struck in Denver.
And where do you see that? Maybe my eyesight isn't too good.
So on your 1921 Morgan, your mint mark is located on the back of the coin, what we call the reverse, above mm-hmm. the letters D and O and dollar.
Yep.
And the Denver mint started in 1906.
Uh-huh. And this was toward the end of the Morgans, or did they restart? I know that they were big for a while, and then they stopped?
This was the last year of the Morgan dollar. And they also started that same year, they started striking the peace dollar, which was from 1921 up until 1935. So you actually had two types of silver
in 1921?
In 1921.
Very interesting. And so that's worth basically what the silver's worth?
The silver on that today, with silver at $16.26, has a melt value of $12.58. Even though it's clean as a pocket piece, still has a value of approximately $14.
No, it's not too bad.
No.
So I always keep that on hand for good luck. I'm not sure if it works, but no real bad luck since I've had it.
There you go.
Our number is 800-348-2551. If you have a coin that you're itching to find something about, 800-348-2551 is the number. Jeff DeMiss of Ferris Coin in Albany is here to answer your questions. What's the rarest coin you ever had to deal with at Ferris?
Years ago, we did handle the $50 pan pack. This is a commemorative coin from 1915, and there was two varieties.
Yeah.
You had your octagonal and your round, and these are in mint state. They came out of a major collection. So those at the time had a value of over $60,000 each.
Wow. And now, what was the name of it?
It's the 1915 $50 gold pan pack. They were the exposition.
Ah.
So they made a 50-cent piece, a dollar, a two and a half, and then the 50s.
And how many 50s did they strike?
I believe around 350 or so.
Well, that's not a lot.
Very, very rare item.
And who bought that one? Some rich guy, huh?
He still has them. They're still in his collection. They went to a private collector.
Nice. Our number here is 800-348-2551. We got a couple of quick calls on the line here, and we'll go over to Monica. Monica, where are you calling from?
Pitio, Massachusetts.
Well, you are on the air with Jeff DeMiss of Ferris Coin.
Hi, Monica.
Hi. Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good, thanks. I was just calling. I just tuned in, so I probably missed the beginning, but I have quite a few Buffalo nickels that I'm saving for my son, and I was wondering if they still held any value at all today.
They do. When I see Buffalo nickels, they generally have four categories. The first one is what I consider ones that are dark, dirty, damaged. And then the next category would be no dates, and then partial dates, which are two clear digits, and then full dates, which are all four digits, are very strong on the coin.
Yeah.
And you get your no dates and partial dates because it's mostly composed of 75% copper, 25% nickel, a little bit soft material. The date's the highest point on the coin, and it tends to wear off easily.
Yeah.
But it's still one of the more popular coins that people like to collect because it's a great design.
They're worth at least 5 cents.
Yes, even your no
well,
dates.
At least I have about 20 cents then.
Your typical full dates are worth approximately 50 cents and up, and then
that's good.
And there's quite a few mint marks, and there are quite a few rare coins in the Buffalo series, depending on where it was struck and when, and then it's all about condition.
What would be a very rare Buffalo nickel?
The scarcest, for example, is your 1913S Type 2. So that was struck at San Francisco, and for that year you had two types. Your first type, it looks like it's on a raised mound. That's your Type 1, and then your Type 2 is where it's a flat surface. So typically a 1913S Type 2 with a nice full date is a coin that's retail $300 and up.
Wow.
Wow.
So how would someone like Monica, who has these coins, do some research without going into a store and saying, here's what I got?
You can certainly go to your library. There's different price guides on coins. There's the Red Book. You can go to Google and research this material.
What's the difference between the Red Book and the Blue Book again?
The Red Book is more of retail prices, and your Blue Book is more of wholesale prices.
So what the dealer would pay would be in the Blue Book?
Correct.
I see. All right, Monica, is that good for you?
Know. Yes, thank you so much.
You're Thanks
welcome.
A lot.
Thank you for calling.
Let's go over to Andy. Where are you calling from, Andy?
I'm calling from Milan.
Ah, I almost thought you were in Milan, Italy, but it's Milan. All right, well, you're
That would be cool. You could just pretend and say I'm from in Milan. That would be all right.
You're on the air.
But really, I'm in Milan.
All right.
I have, I think it's an 1801 penny from the Bank of Upper Canada.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm not looking at it. I'm going on my recollection. So, okay.
The Bank of
can
Upper
you tell
Canada.
Me anything about it?
What is that?
Yep, Bank of Upper Canada.
So, I've had quite a few of those over the years. The year sounds a little bit off on that. Generally, they're a little bit later, but most of that stuff, we see a lot of it down on the East Coast because we're so close to Montreal. So, we see a lot of Canadian material. Generally, it's all about condition on that. as long as the coin's in decent circulated condition where it's not damaged or cleaned or dug out of the ground, that's something that's probably in the range of $5 and up.
Uh-huh.
And
okay.
All right, again, are there rarities that you'd be researching to find out if this is one that might be worth more than that?
Yes. You could certainly go look this up, check out the date for that series. And with coins, each year can have different amounts that are minted. So the fewer that are minted or the fewer that escaped being melted, or a lot of these early copper coins, even the U.S., were taken, melted down, and used to strike U.S. coinage.
Yeah.
So you could, they may have produced a half million, but maybe 5,000 only left because they're repurposed.
Right. Okay. Well, we'll have to take a break here. Andy, thank you for that one. We are joined today by Jeff DeMiss of Ferris Coin in Albany. Your questions are coming up at 800-348-2551.
Support for WMC comes from Empire Exhibits and Displays, Mechanicville, providing commercial casework, custom display solutions, and interactive exhibits for special events, permanent museum installations, and trade shows nationwide. EmpireExhibits.com. Dr. Lucy Chapik, Latham, New York, practicing aesthetic plastic surgery, working to help people improve their appearance and well-being. A surgeon's hands, a woman's touch. CAPEKplasticsurgery.com. Wild Bird Junction, Backyard Nature Shop, 308 Delaware Avenue, Dunmore, offering wild bird seed, bird feeders, bird houses, bird baths, garden decor and tools, binoculars, chimes, and nature gifts. WildBirdJunction.com. And Pelham Auto Service at the Amherst Belchertown line, located by the sign of the Flying Pig, a worker-owned and operated service repairing foreign cars since 1972. PelhamAuto.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here today, joined by Jeff DeMiss of Ferris Coin in Albany. We answer your coin questions at currency and bullion at 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551, or email voxpop@wamc.org. And Jeff, we'll take a couple of quick emails here and then back to the phones. This one is from Michael. Of all the stuff that comes across the counter, what's the most memorable, valuable thing you've seen? And I think we talked about that.
Yeah, that would be the 1915 Pan Pack $50 gold piece. Just super rare, fascinating.
Yeah.
Just a chance to buy and sell those. I regret selling them, but we, you know, you do have to.
You got
to
do what you got to do.
Along.
Yeah. This one's from Patrick in North Adams. I have an old 15-pound church bell. It looks like it's gold, but it's most likely brass. Is there a good way to determine which it is?
There are some different things you can do. If you have a scrap dealer in your area who deal, and they would possibly have an X-ray spectrometer who could test that for you. So there's here in the Port of Albany, they have that equipment, so you can know exactly the type of metal
okay.
you have.
This one is from Frank. Subject heading, Buffalo 5-cent piece. Rarest one is a 1918 7D. I guess that's Denver. Or 1916 double die. That's from Jeff. Oh, it says, hi, Jeff. That's from Frank.
Hi, Frank. The between the two, the 1916 over 16 double die, in today's market, exceeds the 18 over 17 D. For example, in VG condition, your 1916 over 16 has an approximate retail value of $5,000.
For a nickel, Buffalo
for a
nickel.
Nickel.
So don't get rid of the Buffalo nickels.
No, save your nickels. And whereas the 1918 over 17 D in VG has a retail value of about $900.
Oh, that's pretty great. Okay.
So there's some fun stuff
Unlikely
out there.
I will get change like that at the 7-Eleven, but you never know. Let's go back to the phones at 800-348-2551. Jeff DeMiss is our guest from Ferris Coin in Albany. Casey in Middletown is next. Casey.
Hey, how are you? Excuse me. I have a 2009 Double Eagle Ultra High Relief. Which I purchased directly from the mint. I was planning on reselling it for a profit. Is there any sense in getting that proof just for the sake of resale?
Are you referring to having the piece professionally graded, or when you?
Yes, that's exactly it. Yep.
Okay. The issue price on those, if I remember, was $1,200. The secondary market has exceeded that. It has come down a little.
What do you mean the secondary market?
In other words, in today what you'd resell it for after it was issued and sold by the U.S. Mint.
Right.
And then it's then it really becomes up to the secondary market, what collectors or dealers are willing to pay for it.
So that's the going rate.
That's the going rate. So the question of grading the coin is, it's really, which is something you can do, would probably cost you approximately $40. There is value to it if it came back in a 70, which is a perfect grade. If it comes back 69, which can be something as small as one tiny little mark on the piece, then in today's market, it's probably not worth doing. But it's really having a professional look at it and going over it, see if they think it's a 70, and then deciding whether you want to spend the $40 to have it graded.
Okay. Well, let's talk about that for a minute. And thank you, Casey. Somewhat subjective, yeah?
Yes.
So do you get a second opinion if you don't like the first opinion? How do you go? How do you know that what that person is saying, okay, you have a 68 here. How do you know that that's correct?
Well, as I say, grading is an art. It's not a science. It is subjective. When your two main grading services are PCGS, which is Professional Coin Grading Service out of California. Your other company is NGC, which is out of Florida, Numismatic Guarantee Corporation. They have, when they're grading, up to three people who grade that same coin, and then they also can have even a finalizer. So you're getting the opinion of more than one person. They stand behind its authenticity and its grade.
All right, well, let me ask you this in a more practical way, Jeff Demes. In your line of work at Ferris, somebody comes in and says, hey, I got a perfect 70 here, double eagle, whatever, yada, yada, yada. And you look at it and you say, well, listen, I don't agree with that grade. I mean, does that happen?
It certainly can, and it is opinion, and I try and show people why I would say it's not a 70, and it can be such a teeny little mark on the coin, it technically is no longer a perfect coin. And usually that's with either a 5 or 10 power magnifier. Stuff okay. You can't even see with the naked eye sometimes is enough to disqualify a coin from being perfect.
And once it's no longer perfect, then the value drops off fairly rapidly?
In some cases. In some cases, you still have your base or your base value. But it certainly helps on older coins, the higher the grade. Okay. It helps its value.
All right, back to the phones we go. And Cynthia in Northampton. Cynthia, you're on.
Yes, hi, Ray, and hi, Mr. Ferris. I wanted to ask you, my parents used to buy these proof sets in the 60s and 70s every year. Are they worth anything?
Proof sets.
Yes, it depends on the year. For example,
okay.
It depends on if you have proof sets in the early 60s, which in that case, your dime, quarter, and half were 90% silver. So that immediately adds $10 in silver value to those sets. And then in 65 through 70, just your half dollar was 40% silver. So that helps most of your proof sets from 58 through 64, they have a retail value of approximately $20. Your proof sets from 65 through 69 have a retail value around $8-$9, your 1970 proof set. That's a little better set because that's the only way a collector could get that half dollar was either out of the proof or mint set. Has a lower mintage, that's helped retain its value. The 70 proof set is around $15, and the 70 mint set is
okay
in that same range. Once you get away from your silver sets, once you get in from 71 on up until 91, a lot of those you could obtain for $5 to $7.
Okay. Cynthia, thank you very much for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. Jeff Demes is here from Ferris Coin in Albany, and he's here to answer your questions. Killian in Loudonville is next. Killian. Can you turn your radio down a little bit, Killian? Oh, boy.
Hello, Killian.
Oh, that's a shame. You know, you wait all that time. Call back. Let's go to Mark in Cooperstown. Mark.
Hello. Nice show. I was curious if you've ever heard of a hobo nickel. I like Buffalo nickels, and I read an article a few years back where hobos would make artwork out of the nickel to trade for a meal or something like that. And I saw there were about 15 different ones that this collector had, and I was just wondering if you had ever seen or heard of hobo nickels.
Have you heard of a hobo nickel?
Yes, I have.
All right, let's find out about that.
I've actually had the opportunity to buy and sell many of those over the years.
Yeah.
And you're right. There are some famous artists who design these, where some of these hobo nickels can bring thousands of dollars because they actually would sign like their initials on these coins. And it depends.
Okay.
The value depends on how artistic, how well it's done, what the theme is. There's some generally, as long as you can show where something is not modern machine done, that's where it's affected the market a little bit. You can tell where these are actually hand carved. Someone sat there with a knife, took the time. So
out of what material?
Actually, on the buffalo nickel.
So they took a buffalo nickel and then carved it. Isn't that a federal crime, sir?
No, it's not, because it's still worth 5 cents.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
So.
Right. Okay, so you have seen them, and they are around.
They're available, and you can buy decent condition ones in the $50 to $100 range.
Wow.
All right, well, there you go.
Okay.
Never heard of a hobo nickel before.
So you're really combining artwork with coins.
But how in fact, does one catalog these things, which were sort of not black market, but in a secondary economic system?
It's really what a collector or dealer is willing to pay for it and what they think they can resell the piece for.
And how, and furthermore, what's to stop somebody who has a drawer full of buffalo nickels from doing art on them and then making 50 a pop for them?
There isn't. It's really about people, dealers have gotten to recognize the artwork that's been done on these coins. It kind of, but certainly you're right, someone could go and do it today, but I think people have seen enough of the examples that were done during the Depression, even earlier, that they kind of have the right look, and there are some famous artists and some nice stuff.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. Jeff DeMiss of Ferris Coin is joining us this afternoon to answer your questions. Let's go to Ken in Rosendale. Ken, you're on.
Hey, thanks for the show. Thank you. Got a quick question for you. I picked up a boatload of pennies, 50s, 40s, 30s. Are they worth even holding on to?
Well, it's a two-part question, but they do have a premium. Any of your wheat pennies from 1958 and back, for example, your common wheat pennies from 1940 to 58, they have an approximate retail value of 5 cents. As you start going back in decades, for example, in the 30s, excluding your semi-key and key date 31, 32, 33s, then they jump up to around 7 cents. Your 1920s, you have your semi-key date 1922D, your 26S, you have some...
Why are they key dates?
It's based on the mintage.
Okay, so 31, 32, 33 are big years?
31Ss, that's in retail value in a 1931S because of so few were made. That's something that is in the $75 range.
Wow.
Where a 1934 is worth 7 cents.
How about that?
And it's all...
So you really have to get your magnifying glass and go through every one of those things.
Yeah, in a grouping, there's a possibility you could find some semi-key or key dates.
All right, Ken?
Okay, so if I paid $1.50 for a dollar's worth of pennies.
Okay, we lost you there, but...
that's okay, yeah.
We get the point.
Yeah.
So that would be a fairly... might not be a bad risk, right?
No, because he's paying 1.5 cents, and they'll have a retail value of 5 cents each. That's a pretty good rate of return.
All right, fair enough. Our number here, 800-348-2551. We talk coins today with Jeff DeMiss here on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551. Laura in Pittsfield. Laura.
Yes, hi. I found a bunch of old coins, a lot of silver dollars and silver half dollars in my mom's bureau. I don't think any one of them is particularly valuable, but over, you know, if you conglomerate them, they might be worth something. And I didn't know where a good place to take them would be, in either the Berkshires or the Albany area.
Okay. Well, we're not going to give you specifics, but where would somebody look to find a good reputable?
You could certainly go online and just look up coin dealers in your area.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Okay.
Well, that's fair enough.
And thank you.
Of course, if it was me, my paranoia. Not that I don't trust coin dealers. I would first go to the library and get a rough before I went
research.
In. Yeah. And over to Jim in North Pownell, Vermont. Jim.
Yes, good afternoon. Great show.
Thank you.
I've been a coin collector since I was 10 years old.
Nice.
And I have a 1983 proof set with a frosted Kennedy. It's a proof coin, but but JFK's head is frosted. I was wondering if there's a premium on that.
A frosted Kennedy. That's a good drink too. Delicious.
Yes. Right. And to answer your question, you can have, for that year, some of your proof coin is, they're not as nice as other, a little bit dull looking. And the value, that's something up in the secondary market. Some people do break those out of the sets and have them graded, because back in the 70s and 80s, the quality control was not as strong as at the mint as it is today. So you can look, you could have 10 1983 proof sets, 9 out of the 10 halves are not as nice in the 83 is. The value on something like that, it's really how nice the coin is and finding collectors who specialize in that piece.
Okay. Frosted Kennedy, interesting. Well, Jim, thanks a lot for the call. Let's go over to Dave in Connecticut. Dave, you're on.
Hey, Ray and Jeff, how are you?
Good.
Hey, I've got a 1923 Liberty silver dollar, and in the wording, in God we trust, the U in trust looks like a V. Is that common?
That is. That's the way the coins are designed. That's a question I get all the time. So that's actually part of the design, the way it was done, and it's the way what you want to see.
Okay, good.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot. So if you see a soft U, you got a problem.
Yeah, or it could be a minor error. It could be interesting.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. Jeff DeMiss is here from Ferris Coin in Albany, and answering your questions, we go over to Sydney in Cooperstown. Sydney.
Hello. Good day.
Hi.
My question has to do with Cuban bonds.
Cuban bonds.
We have a number of Cuban bonds that my dad bought in the late 30s, 1937, 4.5% bonds that were supposed to come, mature in 1977. Do they have any value, or might they one day have value other than interesting memorabilia?
You have a two-part question. On bonds, you can do some research. At least, for example, I can tell you a little bit about American bonds. You can contact a broker and see if they're still good. Some of the people have exercised or gotten the return on them. One of the things with Cuban material, for example, you cannot sell it on eBay, so it's actually affected the value.
Interesting.
So Cuban stuff, it's a little bit questionable because of you can't sell it on eBay and other.
That could change, though, yeah?
It could. We're hoping that it would with some of the change. But so that has affected that market. I'm not sure on those. You'd have to do a little research, maybe talk to a broker, but because it is out of the country, that's something maybe you can find someone international on that.
Great. Well, thanks.
Thanks,
you're
Sydney,
welcome
for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. JD in Kingston. JD.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good.
Good.
Hey, I have a question. At a garage sale, I bought some silver-colored pennies, about 10 of them. I know they're not silver, but can you tell me anything about them and what the value might be?
What are they? He dropped out. What are they called?
I believe it was...
They are pennies that are like made of steel or silver from the 40s.
Right. So what you have is they're zinc-coated steel. They're produced in 1943. They were struck at the Denver Mint and the San Francisco Mint. Between the three mints, for example, Philadelphia was $84 million, Denver was $217 million, San Francisco was $191 million, so almost a half a billion. The retail value on those, assuming they're not rusty because the steel will rust, is approximately 12 cents. And
That's a great piece of history, though.
And they needed the copper during World War II.
Yeah.
So they changed the pennies, and they also changed the Jefferson nickels. They made what we call wartime nickels from 1942 through 45, which were 35% silver. Same thing, they had the copper nickel during World War II. So it affected some of our coinage.
Are there any rarities among these steel coins?
The steels, there is a 1943, what we call a boldly doubled mint mark, where the mint mark is punched twice. That, in uncirculated condition, has a retail value of approximately $100.
Well, there you go. Well, JD, thanks a lot. Of course, it's probably pretty tough to find one in uncirculated condition.
They're around. I've actually had original rolls for the P mints retail around a dollar or so on for that. The S's are scarcer.
All right, let's take a quick break here. Our number is 800-348-2551. Jeff DeMiss is here from Ferris Coin in Albany, and we'll hit the home stretch in a moment.
Support for WAMC comes from Saratoga Jewish Community Arts, presenting the film A Borrowed Identity, Sunday, April 15th, 7 p.m. at Temple Sinai, Saratoga Springs, 518-584-8730, option 2 for reservations. Vision Excel Eye Care, Lake Katrine. Exams, eye care, dry eye therapy, and now new American-made frames where eyewear is an art. VisionExcelEyeCare.com. Chester Common Table, Main Street, Chester, Massachusetts. Locally sourced comfort food, beers, wine, and cocktails. Live music every Friday. ChesterCommonTable.com. George Heigl Antiques, Boston Spa, New York. Offering estate sale services, including management, appraisals, and evaluations for individuals, families, and businesses. 518-396-7974. And George Propane, Goshen, Massachusetts. Family owned and operated for over 75 years, serving Western Massachusetts with propane and full-service heating and plumbing installation services and deliveries. GeorgePropane.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you, and joined today by Jeff DeMiss of Ferris Coin in Albany. Wow, what a popular show you have going here, Mr. DeMiss. We will make this the lightning round. We'll blast through some emails and then get to as many calls as we can. We probably won't get to all of them, but let's give it a shot. You ready?
Sounds like fun. Let's go.
This one's from Daniel. I have a Series 1957A silver certificate dollar bill that's in fair condition. Could you talk a bit about the silver certificate currency, history of it, and its rarity and current values? I see a lot of fives, reserve notes. And
yeah, the silver certificates, in the case of your $1 for, they made a 1935 and a 1957 series. They have the backs that look like what you would see on your bills today.
Yeah.
Decent circulated condition, have a retail value of, let's say, $2. They also made $1 silver certificates in 1928 and series of 1934.
Okay.
They're referred to as funny backs. The design is completely different
really?
Than people had seen. Their retail value of more of $15 to $20 and up. There's, and then the other part of your question is the silver certificates, they made ones, fives, tens. You could actually redeem those for an ounce of silver. That program ended in late 1967, so they're now more of just kind of collector items,
yeah.
And it's just part of our history.
Okay, very good. But can you use it as a $5 bill?
You could spend it.
Okay. This one is from Andrew. I found an 1846 one-cent piece and wanted to know what it's worth. Well, it's a little tough in an email, but go ahead.
Andrew, it's all about condition on that. It's a lot of those that I've seen, if they're nice, good, and better, where it's not cleaned, bent, damaged, that's a coin that retails for around $20. A lot of what I see has problems, can
yeah.
be from $3 to $8. And, but
it's
a good
kicking
series.
Around for 180 years.
Yes.
It probably is beat up. This one is from Tris. Is it possible to buy a gold brick like I see in Fort Knox? And if I could afford one, what's the smallest one I could purchase? That's from Tris and Hurley, thinking big.
And gold bars, you can buy them as small as 1 gram. There's companies that make 1 gram, 2.5 gram, 5, 10 gram, 20 gram. Your standard one is 1 ounce. But you can buy up to kilo bars, which are 32.15 ounces. So
that's like in the Goldfinger movie?
Yeah, that's what I want. It's if you have the money, they're available.
Put them under the bed. This one is from Emily. How can one tell the difference between a real or fake Lima, Peru 8 Escudo 1736 coin?
So I'm looking at coins to determine authenticity. One of the first things I look at is color. That tells me a lot about it. For what carat gold is. And then on something like that, I'd look at the edge of coins. See, make sure it wasn't cast where you'd see a seam. Those were hand struck. So you look at the reading. Then you start looking at the lettering of the coin and compare it to some things. And then the other main thing is you check the weight because they're pretty specific on those. So it's a combination of factors to determine it.
Do you ever run across an old Roman coin?
Yes, you can buy inexpensive Roman coins such as Constantine, who's from approximately 307 to 327 AD, for as little as $5.
You're kidding me!
There's hordes of them still that were found.
Oh, that is so cool!
And he's credited with bringing Christianity to the Roman Empire. So,
and how much?
Approximately $5.
Wow!
A real piece of history.
That would seem to be a good investment. This one is from Daniel. Do you have access to the 1935 Hudson, New York sesquicentennial silver half dollar?
We do, and that's one of the many commems that are for New York State, such as the Albany, the Long Island. You have your Hudson. that's a coin that they made approximately 10,000 of them.
Yeah.
And they're available in this area because they circulated. They're sold right out of Hudson, so there are around.
Okay, this last email, and then we'll get back to the phones. From Mark, I have a collection of quarters that predate 1950. Are there any U.S. quarters that are worth more than just 25 cents? Well, we've talked a little about that. If so, which years are worth more? How can I find out without getting ripped off? And that's from Mark.
Mark, good question. Any of your dimes, quarters, and halves from 1964 and earlier are 90% silver. So immediately, that gives a silver value of approximately $3 to your coin. Going back prior to 1950, you'd want to look like to your in the Washington quarter series, your two semi-key dates, 1932, D&S. Mm-hmm. They're worth, let's say, $75 and up.
Really?
And prior to that, you get your Stan Libby quarters. There's quite a few good dates. So there's value just in the silver alone, and then you can get into your date, mint, mark, and condition.
What's a Stan Libby quarter?
So the Stan Libby quarter.
Oh, Liberty, you said.
Liberty,
I thought, yes. Stan Libby was a guy who made the quarter. No,
that,
okay.
That was designed by George McNeil, and they're produced from 1916 up until 1930.
Yeah.
The first year of issue, for example, the 1916 is a rare coin. They made very few of them.
Yeah.
And that's a coin in decent condition is worth $4,000.
I like that. Let's go to line four and Mike in Brant Lake. Mike, you're on.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. My grandfather was a general during World War II, and as he traveled around the Pacific Rim, he collected scrip from all the different countries, nations, and places that he visited. And I guess this was a habit at the time, or a thing at the time. He taped them all together end to end, and when they hung out at the officers' club, he had generals and colonels and things sign those all the different pieces of currency. And I'm just wondering if those are worth anything.
That's cool.
Yeah, and I've seen a fair amount of this over the years, and it really tells a story. I can kind of see where they've been, and by signing notes, that there's a term for that called short snorters, where you'd have people, let's say your company, sign the notes. And this supposedly originated by pilots in Alaska. And the thinking was, if you ran into each other, you were supposed to produce that note that was signed. If you didn't, whoever didn't have it had to buy the person a drink, hence the short snorter.
Yeah, of course.
And it depends on, some of those notes can be common because a lot of it was brought back in quantities, but there are some better notes from Japan and China, depending if they were there occupied later and so forth.
Well, I would think, depending on who signed it, a World War II memorabilia collector might be very interested in that.
General MacArthur signed some notes after he went back to the Philippines, and some of your other famous people have. So, yeah, you can certainly look at the signatures and do some research on who they are, and if they're awarded the Medal of Honor, or et cetera, can help add the value.
Mike, thanks for the call. Over to Mary Jo and Bern. You're on.
Hi, Mr. DeMiss may have started to address this, but I didn't hear his response. I also have a 1974 silver penny, and I did a little research on the internet, and they said something about the U.S. government was experimenting with possibly going in that direction. And they floated these out to Congress people, but it didn't work. It didn't take. And if you have one, you're supposed to get it back. Do you know anything about that?
I have heard of this, and you're right. And this refers to what we call pattern or trial pieces, where the government, they'd have people design with different metals, different coins, because they're looking to change currency, or the cost of what the metal they were using is exceeding the face value. That's an interesting piece about returning that. The first thing you'd have to do is you could go have it tested with a spectrometer, find out what the metal is. It may just be your copper penny that's been simply plated.
Yeah.
So it has to be further researched on that. But interesting piece.
That is very cool.
Who would do that, sir? Who would do that kind of testing?
There are places at the Port of Albany with spectrometers, and they could do, without damaging your item, they could do an analysis of it, and you could get a printout of what the material is. And
wow.
Then you could proceed to the next step.
Well, Mary Jo, thank you, and that's a very interesting call. Over to Ron in Amherst. Ron, you're on.
Yes, hello. I have a statehood quarter without a mint mark. Is that worth anything?
Yes. Which state is this?
It's the Granite State. God, what is it?
New Hampshire, yeah?
New Hampshire, yeah, right. Yeah.
Okay. if you take a magnifier glass, let's say 5 power or higher.
Oh, no. I brought it to a local coin dealer and I had him show it to his customers. So they came in during the week, see if they could see any sort of a mint mark. Now, the coin dealer says, oh, yes, that's a specific mint mark. It's a P. Another guy came in and said, no, I can see a D. And most of the people, I had him count the people who came in, and most of the people said they didn't see anything on the coin.
All right.
I didn't see anything.
Well, you could send that out to a third-party grading service and spend approximately $25 and then get their professional opinion. And if it does come back where it's missing the mint mark, then it makes it easier to sell that because you have an independent party who's made that decision. And
how much more would it be worth?
You'd have to see the number of pieces if there's others of New Hampshire that don't have a mint mark.
Is that very rare?
That to me is something I'd say scarce.
Huh, very interesting.
Huh.
Well, good luck with that one, Ron.
Okay, hey, thank you very much.
Appreciate the call. And let's see, who's been waiting the longest here? Let's go to Randy in Syracuse. Randy.
How you doing?
Good.
I had a question about some Carson City silver dollars. I have a total of 6 of them. They're in the government holders.
Okay.
Are they worth the investment to get those graded, to send them out and spend the money?
Well, the first thing, it would depend on which dates you have. The most common are 1882, 83, 84. And if you have those, depending on if they say uncirculated silver dollar, that's your group one, which tend to have your nicest quality. And you could, if those in today's market, if they look like they're going to be MS-65 or better, then that's certainly something you could decide. Then you get into your better dates, such as your 80, 81, 85. It's all about...
I got all of those right now. And the 78 also.
Oh, 78, yeah. Your better dates, too. Yeah, you could certainly take it to a dealer who sends stuff out and have them give you an opinion. And if they look like it warrants it, you could send them out. And
what would it cost to have them done it? A rough idea.
I know for grading, for example, with NGC, they base it on the value of the coin. If it goes economy, that's a coin that has a value from up to $300, is roughly $30. When you go from $301 up to $3,000, it's going to cost approximately $45. So you want to make sure that the coin warrants the grading cost for the grade. But I certainly have seen some beautiful Carson Cities that should be graded and have been graded because going to the next grade can add significant value.
Well, thanks, Randy. We appreciate the call. And our number here is 800-348-2551. Over to Dean in Milton. Dean, you're on.
Hey, good afternoon. I have some Franklin Mint items, and they were from my in-laws. I don't know whether they bought them as collecting, thinking they would appreciate in value, or just because they like to look at them. But I'm kind of curious, is there a marketplace for that stuff?
Yes, and as you know, the Franklin Mint has produced a variety of material from the 60s, 70s, 80s. They've made coins for different countries, and so it really comes down to what the composition or metal is. They made brass, bronze. They made a lot of stuff with sterling silver, which is 92.5%, and they also made gold material. So a lot of what I see is sterling silver, which is 92.5%. And, for example, in today's market with silver at $16.26, that has a value of a little bit over $15 an ounce alone.
Yeah.
So you have your silver value, and then most of that is metals, but they did make stuff for different countries, and some of it does have a premium. So it really comes down to what it's
made of. So there are collectors out there.
There are collectors. And
all right, Dean, thanks a lot for the call. And over to line 10, and Marcus in Albany. Marcus, you're on.
Yeah, hi. I just had a question about, I have a $1,000 bill. Now, I'm in my car, so I can't give you too much information about it, but I know, I think it's Grover Cleveland's on it. I think it was minted in Kentucky, and I was wondering if it'd be worth to hold on to it or to see what I could get for it.
First, do you know if it's series of 1928 or series of 1934?
Well, he's driving.
1934.
Okay.
So that's the more common. In today's market, $1,000 bills in decent circulated condition, let's say fine, V-fine, have a retail value of approximately $1,800.
Cool.
They were last produced in 1945. They were taken out of circulation in 1969, but people do like them because just of the amount, you know, it's just a neat piece. And there's good value on $500 bills, too. They're generally $750 and up.
Okay. Well, thank you, Marcus. We appreciate the call. $500 bills are still in circulation?
No.
No.
They're not in circulation. Same thing. They were taken out in 1969, but value-wise, $700 and up.
What was the biggest bill ever produced by the U.S.?
Well, you had they had $100,000 notes, but they never circulated. They're between the Federal Reserve banks.
Yeah.
So you did have, I believe, up to $10,000. Most of your really high-end notes the public never saw. They're more for bank-to-bank or Federal Reserve institutions.
Okay. Back over to line one and Pat in Troy.
Hi. How you doing?
Good. Can you turn your radio down a little bit, Pat? Pat, can you turn your radio down?
Yes, I just did.
Thanks.
Yep. I got two quick questions. Number one is, do you have a book that you can recommend that would be the best way to figure out the value of coins? And the secondly is, my mother-in-law, when she'd passed away, left us a plastic box full of coins. She sorted them into old pill bottles and things like that, but there's hundreds and hundreds of coins. Yeah. I'm wondering if it's worth it for us to go through each individual coin, or should we just bring the whole box to somebody and you know, give it up for, a general price.
Okay, I'll answer your first question. A book that can help is, it's what they call the Red Book.
I'm going to hang up and let you go ahead.
Okay, thanks a lot, Pat.
So to help you, your first question, there is the Red Book, and for example, the 2019 edition's coming out in a few weeks, and that gives you a lot of information about grading and price. Part two is this tub of coins. It's how much time you want to put into it. A lot of people may sort it by denomination. So it may, if you go take it somewhere, speed things up, have a chance to go through, look some of this up. So if you have something of value, you're aware of it, do a little homework on what you have.
Well, I think if it was me, I would be checking every single coin for that one rarity.
And people, for surprise, they do find something that might be $100 or more. The material's still out there.
Yeah. All right. Quickly, let's see if we can kick a call or two here. Let's go over to Dave in Albany. Dave, you're on.
Hi. Me, Dave?
Yeah, you, Dave. Me, Ray.
Great. Fantastic. Let's see. My father was a SUNY New Paltz professor like Dr. Alan Shartok. And years ago, my parents got married in Paris. They had a friend who gave me a middle name and also a whole lot of coins, many of which I've lost. The most valuable, many of them, they're international coins over the last couple centuries. Many of them were not valuable, but I'm told one was, and I'd like to know, perhaps you might know it or have heard of it, or maybe it's not worth anything at all. An 1815 St. Helena half penny. Regrettably, I think it may have been lost during a year that I spent as a homeless person.
Okay, so a 1815 St. Helena half penny.
Correct.
Okay.
That's something I'd have to do a little research on. I don't have I may have come across those over the years, but I can't give you a direct answer.
Okay.
I'd have to get back to you on that.
All right. Well, Dave, thank you. I guess we'll have we'll try to squeeze one more very quickly. Dave in Water Valley, you only have about 30 seconds here.
Okay. I just want to ask about an 1803 U.S. penny.
Okay. 1803 U.S. penny.
Yes.
Okay. So large sense, great series, depends on the variety. Generally, your most common variety is your small date, large fraction. In decent condition, it's worth around $125.
Nice.
But there are some, in large sense, there are a lot of varieties, and the time period of what the mint was going through, low production, and really comes down to whether this is, a lot of these I see are damaged because they're dug out of the ground or they're found in houses. But neat coin.
Okay, well, Dave, thanks a lot, and that's where we will have to leave it. How do people find out more about Ferris? Are you guys on the web?
Yes, you can go to ferriscoin.com. You can also like us on Facebook.
All right. Well, this was fun, yeah?
This is a lot of fun.
You come back?
I would love to.
Well, thank you very much for being here. Support comes from Edgar Bosick, Certified Financial Planner, Private Financial Design, South Hadley. Your life, your plan, your portfolio, privatefinancialdesign.com. Securities through Cambridge Investment Research, member FINRA and SIPC. Agricultural Stewardship Association, helping people conserve farmland in the Upper Hudson Valley. We conserve good farmland for good forever. agstewardship.org. Thanks again to our guest, Jeff DeMiss of Ferris Coin, for joining us. Thank you for listening and for some terrific calls today. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Your calls were answered by Carol Lapani. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, the gardeners return to help you with your spring planting. Right now, stand by for news.